Don't start building your AI app from scratch. Save time and effort by visiting intel.com/edgeai. Get open source code snippets and sample apps for a head start on development so you can reach your seamless deployment faster. Go to intel.com/edgeai.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Stack Overflow podcast, a place to talk about all things software and technology.
Ryan, thank you for queuing this up. You connected with our guest, so why don't you introduce and start the conversation, and then I will join in where I can.
Today, I am joined by our senior data scientist for the data platform, Michael Gaydon. Hi, Michael. Today, we're going to be talking about how to evaluate large language models and their output. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ryan. Well, thanks for inviting me. Happy to be here.
So at the beginning of these episodes, we like to sort of talk to our guests and ask, how did you get into technology and how did you get where you are today?
Sure. Yeah. So I had a pretty circumspect approach towards data science. I started sort of getting interested in stats during my PhD in psychology and realized that sort of as the analytical sides of things interested me more, and I ended up pursuing a master's in statistics and really had a great time with it. And sort of over time, I ended up doing a postdoc on a sort of AI and education lab at Intel Media, and that worked on sort of AI-based solutions for supporting educational outcomes. And yeah, sort of how I over time progressed, and throughout I just sort of realized I really enjoyed the analytical side of things, but also a sort of bit of data skepticism that always comes from any social science field.
Sure. Well, there is a you know, PhD to data science pipeline that I've seen. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. You're part of that. So here at Stack Overflow, you've been looking at, you know, how we're using large language models and how we can evaluate quality of the output, right? So how exactly do you evaluate LLM output?
Yeah, so evaluation is at the core of any model that we want to be either using or building, and LLMs introduce some additional complexity to it, as sort of they belong to a larger class of models of generative models. They're generating some form of new media, and then that is more challenging to evaluate than we might think of as sort of classical ML producing like a regression or classification with a more singular output. So when we're building things out, evaluations at the key, but these LLMs have sort of new challenges involving how to control for that. And we've been using a method that has been rising in popularity of LLM as a judge, mm-hmm. where we use another LLM or to evaluate the generations of another LLM. And that can either be through sort of a singleton evaluation of you just have the generation, a reference guided where you have sort of a reference answer that we might be interested in that can ground it, or a pairwise comparison of where you have two and ask for the preference of them. But that has its own challenges too, which I'm sure we'll get into.
Well, you know, the reason we have to analyze the LLM output, I'm assuming, is that it's because it's sort of non-deterministic, sort of this like statistical prediction, right?
So the non-determinism is definitely one challenge, but another challenge is sort of the breadth of the content that can be produced. So we might think of, we have various aspects we might be interested in. So if we think about maybe question answering is a classic example. So we might be interested in making sure that the generations don't have any toxicity, that they're well formatted and easier to read, that the content is accurate. Or if you're summarizing it, you might want to consider attributes of, did you maintain the key points? Is it hallucinating? So there's a number of attributes we might be interested in considering, each of which has their own properties.
Mm-hmm. And so if the LLM is sort of has a lot of stuff it's drawing from, why is another LLM able to judge? Aren't you just using the broken thing to judge the broken thing?
So that is definitely sort of at the heart of a lot of concerns about it. But I think that it is a different task, and that's worth keeping in mind and thinking of it, in that one is having to generate a response and one is attempting to discriminate. And you might think of them as different skill sets, just as a mm-hmm. skill set to write a book is different than the skill set to judge and say which book you prefer. the requirements of both can look rather different. So it's certainly not outlandish to say that something may generate something poor, but be reliable in evaluating those generations. But to that point, it's sort of, we want to avoid a turtles on turtles situation, or mm-hmm. where we're using a black box to solve a black box. So what if you have a synthetic data generation, and then you have an LLM generate off of that, and then you have evaluation, you sort of can lose sight easily of what's your North Star. And so when using LLM as a judge, we want to validate that compared to some source of truth, like we would for any metric. So for example, if we were to just consider the vague concept of accuracy of the content, we might have human labelers go in and label some content and then use that to validate the LLM as a judge to make sure that its performance is similar. But that often doesn't break down as nicely as you might think. So for example, we have different raters, and those raters have different skill sets. So within the perspective of stack data, we might think of a task of summarization, something that was explored as part of the search experience. You would need someone with enough subject matter expertise to label that data for that to be a reliable label. And you'll likely want to have multiple raters to calculate inter-rater reliability so that you're sort of seeing how reliable is the LLM as a judge with a human rater relative to how reliable are the human raters to each other.
Right. Well, I mean, the human raters are non-deterministic too, right?
Yes.
So you mentioned accuracy, toxicity. What are the sort of other things that you can use LLMs to evaluate other LLMs on?
So it really just depends on the problem you're working on. So generally, it's something that is probably not going to be too surface level. So it'd be silly to do something like a readability score, because we have very cheap and fast algorithms to do that. So often it's more of a complex metric that's content centric, where simpler methods won't really suffice. So I think that's why for summarization, a key point analysis of like how complete is this answer relative to the original ones, or how accurate is the summary relative to the sources, are things where you're not going to really be able to approximate that as simply.
Mm-hmm. Whenever I look at this, I hear, you know, human eval is sort of the benchmark of choice for code evaluation. Are there other standardized benchmarks that you use and that other people use?
So there's a lot of standardized benchmarks, but here within the context of stack application, we're interested in those benchmarks being used to compare models when we're selecting which ones we want to start with. But in the end of the day, our goal isn't to run human eval, it's to perform the task where we're interested in applying this model. And that's going to be the primary thing. So we might use human eval to select, say, three candidate models that we're going to start with. And then from there, have a benchmark that we've made internally based off our own data to ensure the performance is similar. So for example, with human eval, you might see most of the code is in Python or something like that. And we have on our site a large number of different languages and packages, and some of which are sort of high resource that are commonly seen, like Python and Java, and other words that are fairly rarely seen. There's not a lot of resources, or it has very recent information that might not be captured in the model. And so we're going to be interested in evaluations across different aspects of it, as we want to think about the total user experience. So for example, if we had an accuracy of 80% across sort of some high resource and low resource things, but most of that accuracy is within the common things, and the performance is very poor in the less common things, that leads to a pretty poor user experience. So those are some of the aspects that we might be interested in.
Are there ways, besides feeding it more data, are there ways to get it better at the low resource things?
Yeah, for low resource, I think, so there's the question of the generations and the evaluations. So for the context of the evaluations, I think that we have to keep in mind, we need to have, while the discrimination of that relative to performance is what we are interested in opposed to generation, and that can be an easier task. If we don't have enough information, we still can't do it, right? So you wouldn't ask a human labeler to evaluate something that they've never seen before, because they probably wouldn't provide a very reliable evaluation. So similarly, when we're thinking about it, it's the same way, where we want to look at the reliability across different facets.
Right. You have to have somebody trained in it.
Right. because to your question about how well can we have the generations work for low resource languages, we can't answer that within the context of our stuff until we get the evaluation piece. So that's usually where we start, is can we evaluate it reliably to make the choices that we want to? And then once we get through there, then we get to the generations of how to improve performance and tune it for the use cases we're interested in.
So I guess, do the evaluating LLMs need to be custom trained, or can any general purpose one work? The machines that are looking at the machines, custom or off the shelf?
Well, that's where your validation is the first thing that comes key, right? So if you need a way to choose whether or not your LLM as a judge is providing the expected performance. And then that comes mm-hmm. down to really a cost, latency, and performance trade-off of, you know, if you're seeing that model A has high iterator reliability and high validity, but it's costing a lot of money, then you might be interested in something with a moderate reduction in reliability, but a much faster throughput and lower cost. So that's where, you know, a teacher-student model or fine-tuning a model specifically for evaluation. Prometheus is an example of where you can make a smaller model that can approximate a larger one specifically for the purpose of evaluation could come into play. So sort of depends on the trade-offs you're interested in.
Yeah. You mentioned we had a custom benchmark. Did we actually train up an LLM for that? Do any fine-tuning or anything?
So for the moment, no. Right now, it's focused on the evaluation. Part of that is that we're being very intentional on where we want to apply it and putting a lot of safety guards on it. So making sure that any LLM is being applied in a way that the community would positively receive it. So the majority of the focus right now is on evaluations.
I guess that brings me to sort of a gap in my own knowledge. When we talk about these benchmarks, how do you evaluate against that data? Is it sort of in a custom database somewhere? Is it fine-tune trained? Like, how does that data apply to the evaluating LLM?
So the process looks something like you, at the very beginning, define a suite of models you might be interested in. Probably, to be complete, worth exploring a mixture of open source models and closed source ones. Then you're going to run each of those through with whatever your generation prompt is going to be on the specified task. So for the example of summarization, now you have three models, A, B, and C. You've got three generations per sample across each of those. And then you're going to have your LLM as a judge go through and produce a score for them. And then you can use that to produce a ranking across the candidate models for that task. And then it is generalizable, then you should also be able to get a rough concept of how it would apply when it would be deployed. And of course, the offline eval is always an incomplete stand-in for, you know, other online testing, but at this stage, that's what it would be used for. So a lot of that ends up being custom written.
Are there best practices and open source options when it comes to the evaluation side of things that you can draw on? Which is to say, you know, all right, we know Stack Overflow wants to do some work in the realm of code gen. As we do that, we know that on Hugging Face, we can find XYZ model, which is, you know, good at evaluating against code gen. Or, all right, we know Stack Overflow for Teams wants to do, like you said, knowledge retrieval, synthesis, and summary. You know, out there, there's a couple of open source models that, you know, have been shown to be good at this. And of course, obviously, you know, you could do some in-house or, you know, supplement that with HLRF and stuff like that. But yeah, do you find that there's tools that are emerging or best practices that are emerging that you can lean on? Or is it kind of all greenfield and experimentation and you're mostly left to your own devices?
Yes, I'd say that the main thing is these things are changing all the time, right? The benchmarks that are used are changing, the models, the performance, and the trade-offs that they have are constantly changing. So really, rather than naming a specific model, I'd say the key is having a process in mind of defining what are the places you're going to be looking for your model, ideally a benchmark that's related to the task you're doing, such as code generation, human eval, that may or may not generalize to the case that you're interested in. So, for example, if you're generalizing to low resource languages, you're going to see that there's going to be some weaknesses there on how that would apply to your things. Or if you have a recency effect, that might also come into play. So just keeping that in mind. And then publications, things are coming out constantly. So I'd say really for choosing your model, it's really just making sure you have your key application in mind and you're staying up to date on the new content that's coming out, because it's changing all the time.
Yeah. So what are some of the hot new eval techniques that are coming out? What are the changes that are of the moment?
Yeah, I think that there's getting to be a little more nuanced. So there were some early papers, you know, last year that were quite exciting, sharing that, you know, LLM as a judge had high interpreter reliability, or such as 80% agreement with humans who had the same. While that was said, they had a couple of weaknesses that they noticed, such as a position bias, where, you know, certain positions would be preferred by the LLMs, a verbosity bias, so longer responses were preferred, or self-enhancement bias, where you would see that the model would prefer its own generations. And that was really on two different tasks. And since then, there's been a couple more papers that are coming out exploring it, and there's been a little more realization that, you know, there's some nuance to this. So it sort of depends on the tasks you're doing. If you have more of a needle in a haystack situation where a long context window can distract from the task, so in that case, few-shot learning might be challenging. So you might have to do more of a reference-guided approach where you just have a simple description of it. And the small changes in wording can be there. So you might make a small change in wording to your evaluation prompt that makes it change in relation to sort of like how reliable are those. And then that can be an issue when you're using the same human validation over and over again, right? So if you get 500 human ratings, if, depending on how you break that down, that might not be very much on some of the categories that you're interested in looking at. And if you keep looking at that over and over again as you iterate on your prompt, you might accidentally end up overtuning that prompt too much for those specific cases. And then as you get another batch of labels in, degrade your performance. And while it's not exactly overfitting in the sense of like we're not training a model, you are sort of over-tailoring that prompt to that problem.
I feel like, me and LLMs are the same at heart. I prefer my own outputs, especially when they're very verbose. Like that's usually what I would tend to think is the best, but not everybody agrees.
Yeah, it's interesting that LLMs have their own biases too.
Yeah. You know, we were sort of discussing LLMs as eval and, you know, what they're able to do. Are there LLMs that you can use to help guide other parts of the process? For example, one of the things that I've read can create a much more positive user experience in terms of the final output you get for the query is having a lot of prompt engineering behind the scenes that, you know, takes their prompt, structures it, passes it off, gets a response, structures the response, and, you know, brings that back. Are there automated ways to do that, or is that all something that's being done manually at the moment?
There are certainly automated techniques to doing it that you can use, again, sort of in the using LLMs for every stage being an easy answer of what one could use an LLM to try to generate their own
LLMs
problems.
All the way down.
That's done for some things. But that's why, because there's no way to know whether your prompt is improved without an evaluation. So going back to that, like that's why this remains probably one of the first steps and one of the ones that can take a fair amount of time depending on the complexity of your scenario.
So you can't just say, you know, ChatGPT, make this evaluation better, or make this prompt better.
Yeah, the temptation can be to get a couple of labels, see that it works pretty well, and then move on. And then you get to pre-production a couple of months later, and a lot more people are poking at it. And then you realize, oh, well, there's all these weaknesses that we hadn't considered, and they're going to be harder to address at that point.
Mm-hmm. I know there's been some talk about, you know, training LLMs on LLM generated data, sort of not poisoning the model, but making it perform worse. Is there any risk of that with, you know, LLMs just evaluating themselves forever? Is there a pit they're going to fall into?
I think there's definitely a risk of lowering the diversity of information. And when we think about a lot of this, we want to think about what is the data generating mechanism that we're really interested in, right? So we're often interested in handling noisy user-based generated data. So we might think of the example of search. Say you don't have a lot of search queries, you can use an LLM to generate some search queries in relation to a document and train it, and that may or may not work. But that's where it's important to make sure that the synthetic data is as close as possible to the data generating mechanism that you're interested in, such as the users. So for example, when we apply that to stack data, we end up missing a lot of the clever ways that our users are using filters and applying by various tags and other types of information that they're looking for. And given sort of the keyword-based search queries, the LLM-generated synthetic data doesn't approximate that data generating mechanism very well. And so if we were to sort of fit towards that synthetic data, it would make a poor performing model relative to the user content, while it would perform well relative to the LLM.
Right.
And we see the same thing for LLM evaluations, where if you have human labeled data that is following a different data generating mechanism than the one that you're going to be evaluating in, they might not be as useful. So you might be interested in validating question and answering and wonder, well, is it going to be worth all the effort in producing these human labels? And be tempted to, say, get the accepted answer. You could get a find questions with multiple answers associated, and then match the accepted answer to the least common answer, produce a pairing, and have the LLM as a judge state which one is the preferred, and then sort of use the wisdom of the masses to say, well, we want to approximate what the community is saying. And then that could be a way to do a study around the consistency of your LLM as a judge.
Right.
But the problem with that is that the content that the users are producing is likely going to be following a data generating mechanism than the model. So for example, code just not running from a LLM or it hallucinating is going to be a type of error that we won't expect as commonly to occur in answers that match our filtering conditions within the answers on the site. And so that type of error isn't going to be captured or included in those reliability estimates.
Mm. But how many of the LLM's ideas will be closed as duplicate? No, I'm just kidding.
Only 80% of them will be flagged.
Yeah, or downvoted to obscurity. I think about this a lot, and not to be dystopian, but sometimes it feels a bit like the scene in The Matrix where it's like, okay, the AIs will continue to advance, but they do need human beings, as you said, to bring in fresh perspectives or a certain kind of knowledge or maybe solve novel solutions. And then I just imagine Keanu Reeves and all those people, like they're the little battery, in the cell, and we're just the brains that are needed to produce, some form of energy for future LLMs.
Who knows? Maybe we're just our emotions or just the random noise needed to do random number generations eventually, just like the lava lamps.
Yeah. No, ideas are just a random storm of numbers, passing through different synapses. I tend to feel that way more and more every day. But like to Ryan's point, there was that famous paper, textbooks are all you need, and they looked at Stack Overflow and this other data source called The Stack. And then they were like, all right, well, once we're trained on that, we can generate 10,000 synthetic couplets of Q&A based on that. And then if you train, a child LLM based on that data, it performs, as well as a much bigger model when it comes to these coding tasks. And so like in that case, synthetic data proved to be maybe equally useful. Now, as you said, that misses a lot of things like novelty, for example, right? Like it's not keeping up with new languages, solving novel problems, et cetera, et cetera. And now we're going to go off course for a second, but I guess one of the most interesting things to me recently is generative AI's ability to propose novel solutions. They solved an unsolvable math proof that had been hanging around for a couple hundred years. They came up with a better algorithm for the traveling salesman problem. In those instances, however, I think there's a bit of spray and pray, right? Like the Gen AI comes up with thousands or millions of possible solutions, winnows it down to maybe the top 100, and then humans go in and sort of try to help then guide to the final answer or whatever it may be. But I do think Ryan's point about synthetic data and LLM's ability to generate novel outcomes makes me think in the future they'll be used to help generate a lot of the training data themselves.
Absolutely. And we're already seeing that, and that is a highly valuable technique. Just as in the examples that you provided, a key when doing synthetic data generation is making sure, again, it's capturing the problem you want to. So
right.
If you can have a way to discriminate the output and limit it to the things that are relevant or functional, then you can do a spray and pray of have it produce a million solutions and then whittle those down with whatever method. But
right.
For that to have value, you either need a way to make sure that those million are all valid, or you need an external way to validate those to
right.
Go down to something useful. So it certainly yeah. has its applications.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a useful technique when the checksum at the end is something that can be done repeatedly and at low cost, right?
Right.
One question I have is, as folks are listening to this and maybe within their own organizations, they're being asked to consider Gen AI or to work on it. They're being pressured to come up with ways to figure out if this is a technology their organization should be leveraging or can get value out of. Michael, you know, we're talking about evaluation, but like, what's a good framework in your mind to say, my organization might benefit from generative AI, and here's how I would go about doing the discovery, the experimentation, the initial tests, and if it all works, the deployment?
I'd say the first question is pretty key, which is, does it actually need an LLM? Right. Does it actually need to have something like that? Because for many problems, while an LLM can produce a good answer, you can have a lower cost solution for pennies on the dollar that will get a similar performance. So I think the first thing is, see, is this something where you need to generate new unstructured content in some form, and that unstructured content is going to provide direct value. And the next is this something that is going to provide enough of a business impact to merit the cost, right? So there's going to be a fair amount of cost, even if you just use something off the shelf involving deploying it, maintaining it, evaluating it, updating it. So once you feel pretty good on those, you have your business impact, you know that this is the right tool for the job. The next part is developing an evaluation framework, and that can look like many different things. This LLM is a judge, and validating it is certainly one, making sure your scope is tight. So it might be tempting to have 10 different applications of an LLM and have different versions, but each of them is going to require their own care to make sure that they're performing it, their purpose adequately. So starting small and iterating quickly.
Right.
Similarly, once you have that, making a choice of, you know, there's going to be a lot of new attractive models that are going to be quite expensive and large. And is that actually what you need?
Right.
What's your risk tolerance relative to, you know, your latency, your costs, and the performance that you actually require at the scale that you're going to be deploying this?
I've heard from a couple of people, you know, like Ryan and I were chatting with some folks from MongoDB and Google Cloud, that, right, there is this ongoing work, as there is with any, you know, large service like Stack Overflow, has, you know, our site reliability engineers and stuff. But like, when we're talking about, right, you know, a Gen AI application in production, what are the things that you need to work on when it, like the maintenance, you know, the cost, I guess, tech debt that might accumulate, errors that might pop up? Like, can you talk me through a little bit of just like what that overhead is like?
Sure. So, I mean, you have to have the API that you're going to deploy, you need to have the metrics around it. So you're going to have a mixture of sort of offline evaluation metrics to compare different models to see if new candidate models come up, whether or not you're going to switch to them, A/B testing across various KPIs that would be related more towards user metrics and a means to deploy them and compare them, data logging to have something so that you can make sure that you are maintaining the performance that you would like to, an evaluation framework around how well are these things actually performing. If you don't get the performance that you want, you're also fine-tuning, but then depending on your sensitivity to recent data or your situation specificity, you might also need to be doing ongoing fine-tuning, which depending on, again, the format that you're using in LLM, if it's more open-faced like a chatbot, or if it's more closed-faced like a specific task, then that also has attributes related to risk for security, and because the content guardrails that these models are based around can erode when you're doing further fine-tuning on your own data, since you're not going to be mimicking that sort of process. And so the more you fine-tune it to that, the more risky that might be. So again, depending on your application, that can change as well. And then similarly, the code bases, a lot of these things are changing. So you might find that the tooling that you originally had, there's now something more mature that's more attractive that would be better to switch to. So there's a number of places that come into play where you have to sort of consider.
Oh, that's a good summary. As an organization is evaluating all of this stuff, and like you said, weighing, you know, the cost, the ROI, and all that kind of stuff, what do you think is the calculation you would make, let's say you were a CTO at an organization, about doing it yourself, in-house, on-prem, to whatever degree, versus an API with just some RAG set up, or going to like a Mosaic ML and saying, here's my data, can you help me sort of build a model, fine tune it, and then you operationalize it, and I just pay you sort of as a cloud provider. Like, how would you think through that calculus?
I would definitely think through your throughput and your capacity, because if you're going to be the one maintaining that model, that's going to be ongoing effort as models change. You have to switch the new one to fine tune. And it is certainly worth always starting with something pre-canned. So the answer should always be you start with something that's out there. And then if you're not getting what you need, then you can open the door to, is it worth fine-tuning something either to get a better performance or to reduce costs through using a smaller model? And that's where the throughput comes in. If you see a lot of throughput coming in, those costs can skyrocket quite quickly when using an API that you're paying for. And is that going to pay itself off? And in how long, based off of the expected hours to maintain that you are going to see.
Right. How do you think about like hosting or cloud costs if you're not doing an API? You have your own, but maybe you're hosting it somewhere, and you're managing the throughput and worried about latency or like the time from query to response. Like, what are the mechanisms or the costs involved there? Like the general hosting, and then I guess the throughput and inference costs is what I guess I must be referring to.
Yeah, once you get into the instantiation details of those sorts of things, that's where usually on our team, we pass it off to machine learning engineers. So I can't speak as in-depth to that side of the house, other than that those are critical decisions as it impacts the data scientist on understanding whether you should at all. So those are the questions you'll want to answer ahead of time.
Okay, right. That makes sense. All right, everybody, it is that time of the show. We got a shout out to Stack Overflow user who came on and helped share a little curiosity or knowledge, and that benefits all of us here at the community. So congrats to user 1083266 for asking a stellar question, getting that badge, how to store an image in a SQLite database. Asked 12 years ago, 400,000 people have benefited from your curiosity. So we appreciate you coming by asking the question. It seems like there's some good answers on here. Put it in the show notes. As always, I am Ben Popper. I'm the director of content here at Stack Overflow. You can find me on X at Ben Popper. Hit us up. Podcast is Stack Overflow. We're bringing on developers who have hit us up recently or doing topics and questions that the audience suggests. And if you enjoyed the program, leave us a rating and a review because it really helps.
Yeah. I'm Ryan Donovan. I edit the blog here at Stack Overflow. You can find it at stackoverflow.blog. And you can send me some DMs on X at Arthur Donovan.
My name is Michael Gaydon, and my title is Senior Data Scientist at Stack Overflow. And I don't use the social media very much, so LinkedIn is probably your best bet.
Nice. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you soon.